Then, sunny and very hot for the afternoon, a high of 90. Brand new numbers are in now, 66 degrees in Racine. It is 68 for Kenosha, Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the morning show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information at carthage.edu/grad. Support also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Friday Morning Show. I'm Gregory Berg. Back on the 10th of May, Dr. Jack Keating, former chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, died. In honor of him and in gratitude for all of the many interesting morning show programs which we had together, I want to rebroadcast for you today our final morning show conversation recorded right around the time of Dr. Keating's retirement as chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside.
Well, I am excited but sad at the prospect of today's morning show because very likely for the last time, or certainly for the last time in terms of any kind of recurrent basis, we're going to be speaking with Chancellor Jack Keating from the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. Actually, by the time this interview airs, that is no longer going to be the designation behind his name. We are recording this interview in the midst of his last couple of days on the job. By the time this airs, Chancellor Jack Keating will be safely ensconced, we hope, in the beginning of happy retirement after just over a decade of distinguished leadership at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. And certainly a lot of very good things have occurred during his tenure, and many of them in many and various ways due to his able leadership. So we're going to be talking with Chancellor Keating about what his experience has been at Parkside over these last few years and what he foresees for that institution, maybe some of the special challenges which still confront it and higher education actually in general. Chancellor Jack Keating, it's a great pleasure to welcome you back to the morning show.
Well, thank you for having me, Greg. I've always enjoyed these conversations.
Well, and I'm very honored that you would make time for this during what I'm sure is kind of a wild and crazy time for you. Again, we're speaking just as you are really finishing things up. And from talking to your secretary, you are not just sort of placidly riding off into the sunset. These last few days sound like they are really actually quite intense. Tell us what was going on right now.
Well, they are intense, and as you may remember, they had a search for my successor, which actually failed. So I was asked to stay on a couple of extra months, and so this is sort of 10 years plus 2 months.
Mm.
And but during this time, there's a lot of things happening. We had the groundbreaking of our new residence hall, which will be coming on board just about a year from now, and watch that union building get finished, which has been really satisfactory because it's bigger than I thought it would be from just plain old drawings, and it's very well done inside. So I had a sneak preview of it last week, and that will be opening by the first of the year, hopefully. So the union will open with the capacity to feed more students, et cetera, and then we'll have the new residence hall open on right on its heels. But in general, it's just been a blur, quite frankly. The last several months have had terrific goodbye occasions and celebrations, and a lot of the units on campus I've had lunch with or something else to just say the goodbye, because it's been a very interesting, fun, I won't say not a lot of work, but a lot of fun involved with the campus. The faculty have been just terrific for my 10 years there. It's a very well pedigreed, if you will, faculty. They really are interested in their students, and as I go around to alumni meetings around the country, there's not one without someone saying, "Do you remember so-and-so? He changed my career, or she basically gave me a new direction in life." And so that's really gratifying to hear. But the alumni do remember them, and they do remember their alumni. So it's small enough so people can get to know each other, know what each other is doing, and hopefully deliver a terrific education for the students to go there, as well as bring a lot of cultural sporting events to the community that would not be here without Parkside. I just had a lunch yesterday with our Center for Community Outreach, which when I came here was very small, but it's something I was very interested in. And now I look around, a lot of the youthful faces I actually don't know. They're on new grants or new projects that are being initiated by that center, which is really making a terrific outreach to the community and environmental issues and helping nonprofits develop themselves. And that alone was a great thing to see. We were named, I think you remember from a previous interview, that I think it's 64 schools in the country that are basically called Engaged University by the Carnegie Foundation. That was a great honor to receive, and it was sort of a living a testimony to it yesterday when I saw the number of eager faces working there. But in general, it's been a up and down 10 years, of course, with finances from the state and wondering when our budget was coming through. But overall, it's been a very productive time as far as I was concerned, and a very interesting experience. When I was recruited for the job, I had been recruited for several other jobs that I really wasn't interested in, and then the search firm basically told me, this is some place that you'd really fit in because it needs a lot of building and needs a lot of just building up, and I've done that in the past. And so when I saw the campus and saw the quality of the faculty and staff and saw what the mission was to be a diverse campus with a really diverse student population and really being a catalyst in the community for a lot that's happening, it was an exciting challenge, and the challenge proved to be very, very rewarding.
I don't remember what you were doing at the time that you, I mean, I don't know who don't or what you either. Left in order to come to Parkside.
Yeah, it was, I'd been a professor and then a dean at the University of Washington in Seattle for about 22, 23 years. I actually started two campuses for the university. My office was always in Seattle on the main campus, but we started two branch campuses that now are still part of the University of Washington, but they're basically standalone campuses, one in Tacoma, which is south, and one in the north, which was a wild and crazy time, starting the campus and brand new faculty, brand new energy. Then I went to the University of Alaska Fairbanks for five years as provost there, which people don't realize, but it's a terrific research university. It has, I think I had something like 30-plus glaciologists on my faculty. So anything cold, from cold engineering to the aurora borealis to the phenomenon that's unique to beautiful Alaska, our people study them. We're typically the best in the world at it. So that was a very exciting 4.5-5 years. But then when this chance came along, I came here. So I basically just had been at Washington, then Alaska, and now here at Parkside.
It's interesting to hear you characterize, kind of in a sense, the state of affairs of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside at the time that you took over, in that it was, I think the way you kind of characterized it was in need of building up, but with tremendous potential, I mean, in terms
absolutely.
Of its facility and its faculty and this and that. So it's fortunate for Parkside that you were quick to see all this potential, even though there was also this sense that there is something missing here or there is something that isn't quite where it should be.
Yeah, and I think that was easy remedied by just showing respect to the faculty and showing respect to the staff who really knew what they were doing. And that's really what a chancellor president can do. They can't basically take a hammer and hit people over the head. They basically can say, here are your talents, let's see them develop, and that's hopefully what was being done. But the talent there is just enormous. It's a wonderful university, and as I talk to alumni, especially alumni who've been through it and now out in the field, the typical response has been that, you know, we were a small place, and when we got out in the workforce, you sort of wonder, you know, are you going to be up to snuff with the people mm-hmm. graduating from Stanford and Harvard and Madison or other places? And they say it only takes you a little while to learn that not only are you up to snuff, you're as well or better educated than many of these other people from other bigger name universities. And so that's always been gratifying. But it is a tribute, basically, to the faculty that that's the case.
What is exactly or officially your most central and important duties as chancellor? And I'm also curious, I assume that that's fairly strictly prescribed, that it isn't just your idea about what you should be doing, but the fact that you're part of the university system also means that the role of chancellor is rather clearly defined. Am I wrong about that?
Yes, I think you are.
well, okay.
every chancellor has their own personality, and every campus has its own, if you will, personality. But when you come to a campus, like, the first thing, obviously, is the central mission of the campus is to educate the students that come to you and make them basically ready for life. But after that, then how do you do that is pretty much the style of each particular chancellor. And my own style, one of them was that has made Parkside somewhat unique, and I mentioned its awards before, is to really have the campus as engaged in the communities as possible. To give another type of pedagogy, if you will, to give students a chance to be out with their professors in various areas, whether it's economics of interest or social work or psychology, and actually seeing the issues that they're going to be facing in a year or two or three when they graduate, and actually working through them and figuring out the questions that they should be asking in the classroom when they come back. Mm. And that's been a style of teaching that I've enjoyed as a professor myself. And I think is a if you will, a sort of a different type of pedagogy. And so that's an emphasis that you can, as chancellor, you can shape by basically emphasizing that in your talks to the campus and in what you expect the faculty and staff to be doing. Other things that I think that your own style is making sure that I'm obviously a very strong advocate of a liberal arts education, that we're not training people to do a job. We're basically teaching people how to think and how to critically think. And in today's society, on a laptop computer that everybody has on a desk, you have more information than I had in the entire library at Ohio State when I was in graduate school. But how do you use it? And you can get fooled, I think, and mesmerized by playing with false tracks to answers that you might be looking for if you can't really think about it and critically think. So that's really the number one goal I have as an educator. And even the engagement part of it is all basically seeing the questions, now how do you think through and critically think for the answers. And that's really the basis, I think, of a liberal arts education. They say that the average student today is going to change their jobs, not just the company to company, but really what they're doing as a profession. In their profession, five times during their lifetime, at least. That's what the futurists tell us. So if you're not able to think and not able to keep a lifelong education in front of you, you're simply not going to be able to make those transitions. So that's another thing, I think, at least that I hope that I help shape the campus with, which is the strength and which is its strength of a liberal arts education. And what a chancellor can do is really foster that and talk about it, and look also for new types of majors that they may want to be majoring in that are needed in society. For instance, this year we just put in an applied health major. There's so much need now for health as we all grow older, as I've become very aware of that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of not just the doctors and nurses, but also an awful lot of allied health issues that are needed for employment for the good of society. So we put that major in, and it's immediately attracted quite a few students, majors in health and fitness management, not just how do you stay healthy and healthy, but how do you manage facilities and so forth, as you know, which are springing up everywhere to basically help us keep our bodies in shape. So those are one of the 10 majors we put in since I was there, and each one of them is picked because of the strengths we already had on faculty and then the ability to shape that toward what are the needs in today's society and the needs that the students are asking us to address.
When you mentioned the fact that Parkside, rightfully so, has a reputation as being very powerfully connected to the community, I mean, you have all kinds of different programs that make that a reality, not just something you talk about and hope will happen, but, sure. I mean, you have really helped to make that happen. It occurs to me that in some respects, it's even more laudable that Parkside would do that, given the fact that, in fact, it isn't perched right in the middle of any community. It's not right in the middle of Kenosha. It's not right in the middle of Racine. It's, you know, it's out in the boonies. Less so, I mean, as Kenosha encroaches north and Racine encroaches southward, I mean, Parkside seems a lot less remote than it did 10, 20 years ago. But still, you know, you're not right in anybody's neighborhood. And so, in a sense, this has taken it's more of a step of vision to see the college in that way.
Yeah, and you could also, however, look at it giving you multiple opportunities to do this with the two communities. However, you're right. We're the only comprehensive campus in the system that's not right in the middle of the city that it's named for. It's Stevens Point, Green Bay, you name it. With the exception of Stout, but it's right in the middle of where it's the city it's situated in. But when I tell the president this, he thinks I want two salaries. But it's true when you think of it. There's two economic development groups. There's two major school districts. There's two of everything. And I used to call it the twosies, the TWOS. And we used to have breakfasts with the two superintendents of school and obviously the president of Carthage and the president of Gateway. The two economic development people, two of everything. And you can look on it as a stretch, and it is a stretch. You can't concentrate just on one economic development question or one rotary or one. You really have to go both ways. And at the same time, it's the multiple opportunities that we have then to basically serve the community in different capacities. As an example, we've just now started what are called the Rec Center. It's an environmental education center on the river up in Racine. The mayor of Racine basically gave us the ability to use. Then the mayor of Kenosha gave us the ability to use something on the lake. So we have water quality testing going on the lake and on the river. So it gives us multiple opportunities. And at the same time, however, it had, when I first came here, it was very, people really didn't know, not in general, but not as much as they know now, where is Parkside and what does it do? In fact, my immediate predecessor, the interim that preceded me, basically was the first one to put signage around the campus. And people used to say when they went by there, they saw there was a big building, a lot of lights at night, so they assumed it was a prison. But now at least there's signs out that says, hey, the prisoners are safe. They're in school. So our first ads when I came here, we made some ad campaigns. It was the best kept secrets in your own backyard. And I don't think that's true anymore, as much at least. It's not as true. But it is a stretch to go both ways when you put on a, I say I'm on KR, the county line. So for regionalism, that's what I like to talk. So we have a round table and a white flag, and you can come and negotiate between Kenosha and Racine. But it's been, and it's also very interesting to watch the differences in the personality, if you will, of the two immediate cities.
And, you're absolutely right about that.
Both very exciting. I don't think they aren't seen, I don't think, as warring or fighting, but they have their backs to each other in many which ways, with Kenosha looking a lot to Chicago. You can even wear a Bears hat here or a Cubs hat, and Racine looking much more toward Milwaukee for its city.
I still remember a morning show, this is many years ago now, and in our old studios, when somebody screwed up. And so Mayor Antaramian from Kenosha and Representative Bob Turner from Racine showed up on the same morning. And I don't remember, Bill Guy was still around at that point, and I don't remember exactly if they were on the air together or if he did one and then the other or something, but it all worked out fine in the end. What was really fascinating is these two guys ended up sticking around for a good hour after the morning show was done, just kind of comparing notes on, because of course Bob Turner has also been on the city council in Racine for years and years. And it was fascinating to kind of eavesdrop on these two guys comparing notes on their two cities, on the way the two cities did things.
Which
and
they didn't have a chance to do regularly.
Right,
before.
Absolutely.
Yeah, sure.
And I think, and this is probably nearly 20 years ago, and probably over the last 20 years, many more of those kind of discussions have occurred, and probably Parkside is at least one factor in bringing these two communities together in a little more cooperative fashion.
Well, hopefully, and people get sick of me saying this, but we're a regional campus, and therefore the region is composed primarily of two cities, but we also go to Walworth County, and we really try to keep that open-mindedness to our mission, which takes away from the concentration you could have if we were just focused on one community. But at the same time, as I said, it gives us a lot more opportunities to see everything from cultural differences to internship possibilities for our students, etc.
One of the differences that is most profound on the campus is the whole matter of housing.
Oh yeah.
Tell us maybe if there is a single most significant reason why you and I assume others thought it was really important and worth the investment of capital for Parkside to go in that direction.
Well, for one thing, to get the real community spirit that we would like to build in Parkside, it helps to have resident students. With the new residence hall, we'll have over a fifth of the student body, over 1,000 students resident on campus, and that's good. We still are not neglecting by any means the commuters. They're still the bulk of the students, and the new union will give them a place really to park and own by them for themselves. But the continuation of the campus community, besides which some of the programs that we offer are unique. They have to come there from around the state to get them. And other than that, though, simply the spirit of the campus, I think, is much more lively when you do have a resident community.
When I came there,
there were just 400 beds, and then I had nothing to do with it. But the year I came, the big residence hall of another 450 beds came online. So now we have about 800, 900 students on campus. But that was a big shift at that time, doubling the size of the residence halls. But you could almost feel it in the sense of more attendance at the athletic events, more involvement in intramurals, things like that. And now with this new building, we're primarily letting the message of Parkside and what we do for the state be known more statewide, up north and so forth, where we never really recruited before. So, and finally, it gives a cultural mix that you'd like as well. It sounds funny to say a cultural mix in the state of Wisconsin, but there's a lot of states of Wisconsin, and so there's a lot of variety that people can really grow up seeing different cultures, different values, being open to the diversity and inclusiveness that you have to have in today's society, and no better place to learn it than a university.
Mm. And I suppose when you have more people living on campus and around campus more, you're really deepening the opportunity they have for learning outside of the classroom.
Oh, absolutely. And it helps them in their internships on campus. They obviously have a good relationship with the professors that they can continue that. Things like the radio, we have a radio on campus, I think you know about, and I think you've given us some of your old equipment to make it run. So that's a going operation now. The students completely run it. So it just is a lot of us think that part of going to college is going away and living on your own. At the same time, part of what many people today, especially with the economic situation being what it is, living at home is the way to effectively go to college and make sure you get through college without incurring great debt and so forth. And this is a worry throughout higher education in general, that the debt the students are acquiring going through college. At the same time, we proportionally have more financial aid than any campus in our Wisconsin system. We use that, and some of it is loans, but some of it also is grants. And any way we can find the money to to help a student make it through college is where we will go to find it. So,
and what is the enrollment right now at Parkside, and what kind of growth does that signify?
Over 5,000. It signifies in the last 10 years a growth of about 1,000 or one-fifth growth. And so we'd be happy to grow some more, and we think the new residence halls and the new populations that will be hitting the north of the state will help us.
We're talking with Chancellor Jack Keating and talking about some of the great things which have occurred during his time as Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside over the course of just over 10 years, including, of course, the increase in enrollment and the increasing number of Parkside students who live at Parkside versus commuters, although it remains a very vibrant and interesting mix of the two. One of the things which is laudable about Parkside, you've already touched on it, is the physical plant and some of the expansion which has already occurred. And we've had at least one conversation on the morning show about the fact that being environmentally conscious was, first of all, important to those who designed Parkside originally, and it remains a very central concern. Talk for a moment about that.
Yes, definitely. It's a central concern. We're hoping to establish a variety of demonstration projects. One of the demonstration projects is off-campus, and that's, as I mentioned, a river and a water quality in the river and the lake with two different facilities, and a lot of education for K through 12 kids through those facilities. But on campus itself, we're trying to establish some alternate energy receptors that we're a recipient of a grant by that would basically match our money that we can raise to put in the voltaic cells and sun energy. We've surveyed the campus already for potential wind sources of energy. So we're trying to see if we can, if not get off the electric grid totally, at least provide some of the electricity for our campus, or to sell it back to the electric companies who have to now buy back some X portion of their electricity from alternate sources. So we have I set up a group of environmental fellows who are students that are very interested in issues in the environment. For instance, putting in rain gardens at strategic locations on the campus has been something they've been doing. We signed an agreement that is doable, as opposed to some of the agreements are pretty tough to do, if not impossible, but doable about our carbon footprint and all that sort of stuff. So you can't hit a campus today that doesn't think green, and this has been a tidal shift in the last 5-6 years, and so we're right there with it. And of course, the beauty of our campus and the 750 acres that is under our shepherdship is something that we really do want to maintain and make sure it keeps its beauty. And as you said before, Kenosha and Racine are creeping out, and so around us, if you go, that used to be cabbage or cornfields. Now they're housing, and many more coming in. They've slowed down, quite frankly, with the housing problems that we've been facing this last year in this country. But I suspect they'll resume when that gets settled out. So when I came there, literally just 10 years ago, the housing stock around us was at least half or less than half of what it is now. But that means we have a greater mandate, if you will, to make sure our place is a green respite from the built environment. We just completed, with the help of the County Executive Cruiser and also when he was in the legislature, to put a bike path in that now connects us to the bike path. It comes out of Petrifying Spring Park, right next to us, goes right by our activity center, and then goes on down to meet up with the Racine Kenosha bike path. And also we'll connect to Carthage College, and that Kenosha Racine bike path also connects to Gateway. So the three academic institutions, if you so desire, you can get on your bike and hit all of them. Not to say that go to either Racine or Kenosha on the Racine-Kenosha intercity bike path. So it just finished this week. So that's a very nice addition that we've been working on for about 5 years. And maybe students will use it more now that the gas prices are where they are and that type of thing.
That would be nice in a couple ways, wouldn't it?
Yeah, certainly.
That actually provides a lovely segue into a really important topic, which is namely the really nice, warm, cooperative relationship that there has been between Parkside and Carthage and Gateway for all of your time at Parkside. And I just wonder, it feels to us like something fairly exceptional. I'm guessing that not all educational institutions see themselves in such a cooperative light.
Well, I think you're right. Ideally, however, communities like Kenosha Racine, it's rare to have the options that they have. They have a very fine private liberal arts college. They have a very fine technical college with multiple branches, and they have us, a state university. That's a nice smorgasbord, if you will, to have for students to be able to go to school. And we've improved. I know when I came here, Castle Lawson, who used to be the acting president here several times, he was in the place, and he came out and he showed me the numbers, which were abysmal, about the number of students from Gateway who went to Parkside. And then recently, before he retired, he showed me the numbers, and they were from double digits, low double digits, to decent triple digits. I forget the exact numbers, but very much. And we worked hard on it. We worked with the faculty from Gateway and the faculty from Parkside, gotten together and talked about their exchanges. And with Carthage, Greg Campbell is a class act president there, and I certainly get along wonderfully with him. And I think you would say the same with Parkside. And we try to have collaborations of a variety of sorts. Some people say, well, how do you go with your competitor, Carthage? And it's not really a competitor. We really have a whole different a different way to educate the students and a different way to offer them.
Well, and the fact that there's been such mutual success, I mean, if nothing proves your point, that certainly does, that everybody is doing well, and it probably has at least something to do with the fact that everybody's working together.
Yeah, and I hope I've never said a bad word about either of my colleagues or the other universities, and I have not heard a bad word said by them, less than just the opposite, actually. We used to, as you know, and we did it not too long ago, if I remember. The three presidents have a conversation with you every now and then.
A little Mount Rushmore experience
right
here.
Yeah.
I wonder about your relationship with your fellow chancellors in the UW system. Is that more of a sort of figurehead, honorary, theoretical kind of cooperation, or in fact, are you folks in a room from time to time really exchanging ideas in a meaningful way?
Yeah, most probably four times a month I'm in Madison.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Once always for a chancellor's meeting, once a month. That goes for anywhere from 4 to 6 hours, and we all get together. Quite frankly, I think it's what keeps the Wisconsin system strong, because there are certain policies that we will debate and we will argue on, but until consensus is reached, I have never seen the president just come in on top and say, here's how you do it. So it's really a collegial operation, and I'm now the fourth longest in place chancellor, which says it's normal. The normal life of a chancellor on a campus is maybe 4 years. So I'm almost double that life. Some have exceeded that, but the system keeps us strong by making sure we're all on the same page. And it's not some of my colleagues who have left and gone to other presidencies and chancellorship, they said the one thing they miss is the real collegiality of the Wisconsin chancellors. So really, we try to work through our questions and issues together. We're all different, and we all are after the same resources, but we do it in a very collegial way. So it's not exaggerated in saying that 2 days a month you're at the Regents meeting with all the chancellors again, but one day just devoted to all the chancellors, and then usually there's another committee that you're on for the system that you're at. You spend your fourth day of the month up there. But I think, if anything, it's a little bit more than 4 days a month in Madison. So that's a lot of time away from your home campus.
Sure, and it doesn't sound like it's empty gestures and ceremony only.
It's real policy.
Working together.
When you're in tough times, you have to really get down and really figure out the money distribution and things like that.
Money has been an issue, of course, over the years, and not certainly for just the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. Just take us inside that issue maybe just a little bit, if you would. First of all, the problem wouldn't exist if there was just a little more money floating around.
Sure.
And, of course, money for the last few years, of course, has been tight. What role have you played? What options are open to you in terms of getting for your school the resources that they need to function as well as they possibly can?
Well, first of all, the state support's critical. Although when I came here, it used to be paying more than half our budget. Now it pays less than half our budget.
Hmm.
So that some places have called that state assisted as opposed to state supported university. But that's not typical to Wisconsin. That's nationwide. But what steps I personally can take is try to identify people who are interested in programs, identify benefactors that would come forward and help us, especially when you're doing things like capital construction. You have to have some private money. Our new Communication Arts Buildings has a major donor that put $4 million toward it. And then one of our retired faculty said, you really need a concert hall for that facility. So she gave us $500,000. But those are the exceptions. The routine type of monies that we ask for are primarily for scholarships. We have two-thirds of our student body are first-generation college goers. And typically, I think 40% of our student body are in the lowest two quintiles of income, family income, in their households. And so they're going to need help to go to college. They're talented. They really deserve to develop those talents, but they won't be able to unless we have more scholarships. So a big job today of any chancellor, certainly mine, is to see how much money that they can recruit, if you will, from the community. And it's almost a different concept. I remember going to one who became a very large benefactor of us, but when I first met him, he said, I pay my taxes once. That's a state school, and states should support it. I said, hey, now, wait a minute, that's true. 20 years ago, I wouldn't be here. But since the erosion from the state, the cost of education, and then the erosion of state money coordinately, basically, that's not true anymore. And unless we cut programs, or unless we do nothing new, or unless we simply stop all building, we would never progress as a state university. And that's the same with all the campuses. Madison's very well blessed with great endowments and great contributors, but that's the exception in the whole system. Every one of us basically struggled for that money, and of course it is a national problem. But what you do, you lose a terrific asset. I was just reading the paper this morning about some professors who have left now Madison. When you lose those professors, those top line professors, they're the ones that are going to be in big grants that help them do their research. They're also going to be the ones that bring in students. And unless we can grow our own tax base, so to speak, unless we can educate our students to have good paying jobs and then pay taxes, we're going to have a problem sustaining the whole education system in the state. And again, it's not our unique problem, but we have it sort of a little bit in spades because we don't attract too many students to too many younger people to come into the state, whereas we do have a migration out. Parkside is very good at that. We keep most of our students close by, but other campuses have a fairly large migration of students going out to sunnier climates or more attractive job, more attractive pay scales. And so that's the problem the state's going to have to face.
Brain drain.
Yes, and if they lose it. I mean, Madison's the number one funded state university in the country as far as research goes. But if you lose a couple of key players, that's a slippery slope. You can go down pretty fast. So it's really critical that we pay our faculty what they really are worth compared to their peers, and to be able to try to keep them. The quality of life here is terrific, but that's not what you live on alone. You have to pay the taxes, to pay the bills, if you will.
In your time at Parkside, have you done any teaching? I mean, actual teaching in the classroom?
Yes, I did. In my first 2 years here, I taught a very simple seminar. And what I found, it was almost impossible because I had to have a very good teaching assistant because I'd be called away to Madison or some other emergency. And so it was very tough to keep a regular schedule. So what I did instead of that was do a lot of guest lecturing. I would give a class here, a class there, areas that I knew, like psychology is my field, and you know, if any of the faculty that would be teaching, they'd ask me, and if I can still remember what my field's like, and I did a lot of guest lecturing, but I found it was impossible. It was not serving the students well to get your own schedule because you simply had too many other obligations that would mix up your schedule.
Sure. I wonder about the moment in your academic career when you made this shift away from being a professor and also heavily involved, of course, in research into...
Well, I never... it wasn't a conscious decision. It was sort of osmosis. I was at the University of Washington, and they were going to start these two new campuses, and it was going to be very interdisciplinary there. So they asked me to chair a search committee of 16 faculty across all the disciplines. I had a lot of different adjunct appointments, like environmental studies and the comparative religion and political science and architecture. I had background training that I could teach some parts of each of those programs. So I knew a lot of
I mean, you personally?
Yeah.
Oh, personally. Wow.
So I used to teach a lot of different courses, but I was headquartered in psychology, if you will. But they knew that, and they knew I'd been around the campus for a while. I knew a lot of the people. So I chaired this committee that hired about 40 faculty, 45 faculty in one search committee. And when we finished all the hiring process, they needed a head of these two campuses. And so they said, now you hired them, you live with them. And that's how I became a dean of those two campuses and then moved to provost. So it wasn't very conscious. It was something sort of naturally I could do in leading that search committee, and I'm happy to say that both those campuses have really flourished, and they're moving to where we had in by 2010 to be 10,000 students apiece, and they're on their way there. So I'm very happy with that. I'm very happy that, with one exception, I think all the faculty we hired got tenure and so forth. So they were good hires.
Cool. Well, and it sounds like ultimately for whatever. For as much as this was not, as you say, a particularly conscious, deliberate decision on your part, in fact, this has been a very satisfying way for you to go. I mean, I don't think it's always that way. I mean, I think there are a lot of teachers who become principals who really rue the day that they ever stepped across that divide.
No, I miss especially my doctoral students. I had about 15 or 20 doctoral students that I was their director of their dissertations and so forth. And I miss them because they keep challenging with the newest methods, the newest ideas. I miss that. I used to teach a class of 700 students at one time, and Psych 101 for 20, 18 years. I don't miss that, but I do miss the contact with the more intimate, if you will, contact with the students. That's true, and I think any teacher would, but it's worked out.
What do you anticipate most of your time being devoted to in retirement? First of all, am I correct that you're retiring?
Well, yeah, sort of. I'm the system asked me to go part-time to the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, where I'll do some looking at their research programs and their economic development issues. Obviously, I've done a lot of economic development things, related things here, and there's an M7, the Milwaukee 7 program that I've been sort of involved in, and so they want me to keep in touch with that and then to look at their infrastructure on their research, which I really knew very well. We were a research university in Alaska, and obviously my own research at the University of Washington, so I'll be doing that part-time for about a year, I think, and I have some other plans that haven't gelled yet, but most probably will take me back home to the Bay Area, where I grew up, born, raised, grew up, taught in San Francisco. So I may not go right to the city, but there's something in the works that might work out there.
Well, that's a very interesting place to be.
Yes, it is.
What role have you played in the with Lane Earns, who comes in now as acting chancellor? Have you been much involved in the sort of the laying of the groundwork and easing his transition?
As much as we can. He's going to be a very good interim chancellor. He's the provost at Oshkosh. He's a scholar of Japanese scholar of Japanese history, I believe. And he spent, I think, 6 years of his career has been in Japan. So that is a different whole approach to academics. But he'll be, and he's an experienced provost now. And that's the usual step in academia, is to go from provost, which people don't understand what it means. But what it means really is the one that's in charge of all the academic activity on campus, research and teaching. And as far as my own role in it, it's been basically to try to say, here are the issues, Wayne. And Lane, he was down yesterday, and we had a conversation. He was down last week, and we had another conversation, and just ease him into the job as best I can. But quite frankly, when you leave, I think he and I both will make we, by mutual agreement, will sort of keep out of each other's hair, because it's no fun having somebody looking over your shoulder saying, I wouldn't do it that way, I'd do it that way. I think we'll get along very well. It's unfortunate that the first permanent replacement they found had its own problems and his own problems, but thank God we were not saddled with those problems. It was a timely thing. So
yeah, that could have been ugly.
We were lucky that we were avoided that, and we basically now have someone who I think will do a very good job. And they're looking at the whole search process that all the campuses use, figuring out exactly where things may go wrong in search processes, and then start another national search and with more time. This last time they had basically 4 months really for the search, and it just was a rush job and just not done.
So, yeah, a valuable lesson probably for the whole university system.
Exactly.
In the last minute or so, tell us what you foresee for your beloved University of Wisconsin-Parkside in these coming years.
Well, I think it can only grow. It's still a young university. It's this 40th year, and in university age, that's like opposite dog years. It's
yeah, right. The toddler.
It's like a toddler. And if you look at the system, we in Green Bay were established at the same time, but the rest of the system, some of the campuses have been there 100 and 125 years, and so it'll take time to grow an alumni and to grow. But I can only see good things in this future. I think it's at a very good place now, and hopefully the next chancellor will have a different agenda, different insights, and see things that I haven't seen that really can be productive. Well, one thing I hope that continues on is the cooperation we've had with Gateway and with Carthage to make sure that there's a real collegial academic community here in this community. And I just think I can ask myself the question, what would the community be like without any of those universities, but without the University of Wisconsin-Parkside? And it would be a diminished community because of all sorts of pluses you bring when you bring an academic entity into the area. But I think it can only grow and get better.
Very good. Well, we will watch that with great, great interest, as I know you will, safely from afar.
Yes.
But it will be great to see someone building on the many good things which you have helped bring about at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. And in these busy last days, I'm really honored that you would make time for a last conversation. And who knows, maybe not the last conversation. We'll hope at some point our paths cross again and we can talk about more of your academic exploits.
Okay, that'd be great, Greg. And thank you very much for having me again. I appreciate and enjoy these conversations.
Same here. Dr. Jack Keating, the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. This was a rebroadcast of my final morning show conversation with Dr. Jack Keating, former chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, who passed away on the 10th of May. Support for the Morning Show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses designed for the working adult. Info at carthage.edu/grad. Support also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Monday on the Morning Show, Nora McInerney-Permont